Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, April 22nd, 2017, and here we are. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
There's a lot going on, including the March for Science that's going on today.
Yes.
The Denver version is right down the street from us, and we'll probably go check that out after we're done podcasting for you folks here. And lots in the news, obviously. We weren't able to podcast live last week, so there's a ton to catch up on. I'll sort of run down the outline of everything that's going on.
Let's do that.
We haven't got a chance to talk about the rising tensions with North Korea. We have Bernie Sanders throwing out wildly mixed messages and doing more purity tests for Democrats who have a chance to take Republican seats for some reason. Rachel's got a thing or two to say about that. We got Bill Riley officially out at Fox News.
Yay.
With a nice golden parachute, because, you know, that's how it is. And just this morning, the Surgeon General of the United States was replaced by Trump. So, and for reasons,
by what, like,
well, he's got the authority to do that. The president can name whatever,
but
Surgeon,
like,
General
who did he put
wants.
In, like,
some lady. I know nothing,
like,
about her, but I know why.
Holistic energy worker, or like,
I honestly have no idea.
Okay.
I saw a. An African-American lady in a military uniform and a name. And I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I did see a couple tweets mentioning, like, this is the first nurse to become attorney general. And
that's fucking cool.
Well, I hope that means that she was a nurse and is not just a nurse.
Sure. Not that just
a
nurse,
medical
but
doctor.
Like, definitely you need to be a medical doctor to be the surgeon general.
No, but I seriously, I'm not BSing. I know nothing about this lady. I only know she has replaced Obama's Surgeon General, and we're going to talk about why in a little bit, because the why part is the one that's going to make you want to strangle a baby.
Oh, I already want to do that. All right.
Where to start then?
I want to start with Bernie.
All right.
I hate him.
Hold on to your hats, our fellow Bernie guys and gals who are holding on to the dream. I don't know what he's up to, but Rachel has some thoughts, obviously.
I hate him.
Okay.
I do. I legitimately do. I caucused for him, and I intensely regret it. I think he's become some kind of, like, egomaniacal, insane person who has no interest in helping progressive causes. He has an interest in helping himself.
Well, or he fancies himself the new kingmaker for pure progressive candidates or something.
I have no idea. So he's on tour with Tom Perez, the DNC chair, and they're doing this Democratic unity tour, which is, why did you pick not a Democrat to do that, Tom?
I think it made sense in theory, right?
Sure, it did.
Here's
it made
a face
sense in theory.
Here's a face of the establishment, and here's a face of the progressive alt sort of left, not really the alt left, but
I mean,
kinda.
He's one of the most popular politicians in America at the moment, polling wise. But I think it was done in error, because what he has done on this little Democratic unity tour is shit all over Democrats.
Yeah, that's the weird part. That's the part that has got to be driving Tom Perez crazy.
Oh my God, he has to just be like wanting to strangle the life out of this man.
You could probably find out.
Yeah.
Won't say
so.
How.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the important special elections that have taken place, because that's relevant to Bernie.
Right. I don't think we talked about Utah one since there was a it was Kansas. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There was a special election in Kansas, and the Democrat did not win, but came much, much closer than a lot of people were expecting, and that raised a few eyebrows.
So yeah, I mean, like, it's the safest seat for Republicans kind of ever. It's like, you know, deep rural Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And this Democrat got really close.
Within like 5 or 6%,
I think. Yeah. As opposed to like usually 27%.
In a district that Trump won by like 30.
Yeah. I think he won by like, 27 to 30, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So generally, you know, the Democratic Party runs, they don't spend any money, they don't spend any time, they don't care because it's one of those seats that isn't winnable. And sort of, I think, as a backlash is how the media is reporting it. To the Trump administration, this guy got close, mm-hmm. within like striking distance of getting this very incredibly much so. Red seat. And then just a few days later, there was this special election in Georgia.
For Tom Price's seat.
Yes. And because Tom Price was selected for a cabinet position.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Asininely so, and should have never been. And is one of the most corrupt, like baldly faced corrupt people in the history of cabinet appointees.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's not Jeff Sessions, but he's not far off.
Well, he was literally trading in medical stock.
Right. Right.
And then he was named to Health and Human Services.
Right. So maybe you can explain this a little bit better than I can, but there was a special election in Georgia. Again, one of these incredibly red seats.
Yeah.
That's always been safe for the party.
Let me give you a little history, right? In these.
And talk about like what's the, why the runoff and all the things.
Okay. In this, in
it's
these,
confusing.
In these special elections, laws were passed that if nobody wins a clear majority, i.e. 50% or more, then it goes to a runoff a couple months later. And the reason they did this was to try to keep crazy people and Klan people and
yeah,
from, you know, getting like, if there's 20 candidates and somebody gets 15.3% and they're the highest.
Right.
So they want to
really very parliamentary.
Yes.
Sort of. Like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
how
that's the thinking it. And it makes sense.
And the reason for that is that we have a 2-party system. So usually one party selects someone via primary and uh-huh. that person either gets 50% or not. But in this particular election, just a bunch of people ran. And
yeah,
one person had to get 50%, 50.1 or whatever.
You had four or five Democrats, most of them not very well known.
Mm-hmm.
You had six or seven or maybe more Republicans. One of them fairly well known, and I don't know if you knew this, Rachel, for dubious reasons. She was the lady with the whole Komen controversy or
no.
Planned Parenthood a few years ago.
No.
She was the one that basically got, I don't remember if it was kicked out of the Komen Foundation or had the Komen Foundation. It was that big thing where she wanted to, basically she was at the head of that controversy a few years ago with the Komen Foundation and Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
And so she was running for the seat in Georgia as well.
Okay.
And she was the most popular among the Republicans. There were a bunch of Republican candidates. To make a long story short,
this guy, John
Ossoff, got a lot of great grassroots support, a lot of money raised specifically through Daily Kos, our friends there.
And he's 30.
He's 30 years old. Good looking, well-spoken guy. I don't
he's
know
got
a ton
bit
about
of
him.
Experience in politics. He not in terms of having ever served anywhere, but he sort of worked for like as legislative aide and uh-huh. then did some stuff like that.
He's been around.
He's generally kind of a newcomer.
He's a neophyte.
He was 30. So yeah, it's not like he had
couldn't
a lot
have been
of time.
Around that long. No.
He's one of us. So anyway, he needed 50% to just straight win this seat in Georgia.
Right. And the thinking was going into the other night, he's not going to get 50. Polling showed he was averaging like 42, 43.
Which is crazy
which
given
is crazy.
The seat.
Well,
but
long story
that,
short, he ended up getting 48.
Eight. Yes.
So he came tantalizingly close
to just
winning
it
outright.
Right.
Which would have sent real shockwaves.
Yeah. Well, I think it already sends shockwaves that a Democrat in that seat in an election with all of these candidates got 48% of the vote.
Well, it's interesting that he was polling around 42, 43. And in the last few days, Trump threw in with a bunch of robocalls and tweets and then it jumped up to 48. So, of course, that's not anything Trump will take to heart.
Right.
Which is good.
Right.
Because every time Trump tweets about this guy or tries to throw his weight behind him, it actually helps us.
It does.
At this point.
Yeah.
But then I guess we need to connect the dots here and say, and then instead of Bernie Sanders reacting like, look what we're doing here, look at the backlash to Trump and, you know, we can take back the seat. What did Bernie Sanders say for some reason?
Here's why I'm going to strangle the life out of this man. He said, look, don't vote Democrat just because there's a D next to their name. I don't know if this guy's a progressive or not.
Is So let's not take back Tom Price's seat.
No.
Because this guy might not pass my purity test.
Yeah. Let's elect Republicans instead, or just shit all over Democrats because I'm not one, which he's been proudly saying on the Democratic Party Unity Tour. I'm not a Democrat. Don't vote Democrat. Just vote for me everywhere. Because
there's more controversy too that I'll get to in a minute, but somebody,
like, here's the thing. Like, this seat, this is unprecedented historically that this particular seat could ever even be in play for a Democrat. A Democrat got 48%, which is 2% off of getting just the whole thing in one election
with like 20 candidates running.
Yes. We have the potential to take back one of the reddest seats in the country.
And to make it clear, the runoff that's now happening in June is going to be very, very close. Because when you add up all the Democrats and all the Republicans, it's close to 50-50.
Yeah.
Despite Ossoff getting 48% of that.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy. But so it's going to be a tough race. And there's going to be all kinds of negative advertising. There's stuff you wouldn't believe is going to come out.
Yes.
Trump will throw his weight behind it, which is probably helpful to us.
Right.
But
the Democratic Party, the DNC is going to throw Cokes a bunch of money at it. Yep. So but so is the RNC. Like it's going to, if I think it's already a blow to the Republican Party that we're even this close. If we win the seat.
Right. That's not what they're saying publicly, but privately, you know, they're freaking out.
They're freaking out. Yeah. Yes. So
Trump is that toxic right now.
Bernie, though.
Well,
what are you doing?
Well, what was interesting was just a day or two later, somebody like pulled him aside and was like, what the fuck are you saying?
So, well,
are you crazy?
Well, yeah. So hold on. So like this happened and I just burned the world down. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like you are not even just being an asshole. You are actively hurting not only the Democratic Party, which is apparently something he loves to do, but also your own progressive platform. First of all, you didn't have just the will. This is a pretty important election. I don't know, maybe look the guy up before you say some shit out loud. Like, I don't know if he's a progressive or not. Cool. Why don't you go to his website and look it up? Maybe that would be a thing that you do before you talk. Secondly, like, you're hurting us. You're hurting. Are you saying really seriously that if this guy isn't everything that he needs to be, then fuck him and we should just elect another Republican? That's what it feels like to me.
Well, that's exactly what his most hardcore followers basically did in the election. That's the Susan Sarandon worldview, that you either pass my 100% progressive arbitrary purity test that I've invented in my head, or we'll just let the world burn down and then maybe out of the ashes the new progressive Reich will rise.
And then at the same time, yesterday, he went to this campaign stop in, and I'm going to mess up.
Nebraska?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
No, but this is important. Like, okay, so he has a purity test. He doesn't know if Ossoff passes it.
Mm-hmm.
Decides to say out loud, I don't know if he's a, I don't care if he's a Democrat. I don't know if he's a progressive, so don't maybe support him. He rolled that back.
He said, yeah, of course Ossoff needs to win.
It's critical. It's critical. But like, what? Just shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah, the damage is already done. You can't unring the bell.
Right. And then a couple days later, he goes and supports this anti-choice candidate in Nebraska.
Yes.
And says, look, we can't just decide that everybody who doesn't agree with everything that we said, we can't support because it's a really hard seat because it's in Nebraska. And I'm like,
oh my God,
please fucking stop talking. Oh my God.
That, at that point, I really started to, because I read that too, and I started to think like, you know what? This is, you know, it was fun while it lasted and he got people riled up, but this is kind of a doddering old man who really doesn't know what he's doing or what he's talking about anymore.
I didn't think so.
You feel that way?
No, I feel like.
But it doesn't even make
sense.
The
thing that I have been screaming about Bernie Sanders since after I fucking caucused for him is this idea that economic equality is literally the only measure that he judges anyone by.
Yeah.
And if he wants to talk about anything, like this Mel whatever guy
is against free trade, I guess, or something, and that's
he must
why.
Be. Yeah. And so fuck women, fuck abortion, fuck healthcare, fuck whatever. It doesn't matter because this guy passed whatever Bernie
Sanders'
version of
economic
equality, right? But this is my problem with this man is
he's so myopic.
Male white privilege. All he cares about is this little tiny box of economic equality. And it sounds really good. And if he could expand that to understand that, like, part of economic equality is women's access to choice. Because if you think about it, if women lose access to choice or access to birth control, that's an economic impact to us.
But he should know that, and he has said as much before.
He doesn't give a shit about race or sex or any sort of other inequalities that exist in the world. Any sort of structural oppression does not affect him. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care. He knows, but he doesn't care. He cares about economic inequality in this very myopic sense. And I would like to have a conversation with him where I say economic inequality is like access to birth control and abortion is an economic inequality thing. Because if you take that away from women, just to hear me out, then women are saddled with children that they are forced to shat out of their bodies and then raise, taking away opportunity, taking away advancement in their careers, taking away, you know, the
independence,
option to go to college, like a lot of things when you have
career
a baby.
Choices.
Choices. You get mommy tracked if you're already in a job. Like, it is an economic argument. But beyond that, it doesn't matter if it's an economic argument because it's a progressive argument.
Oh, of course.
Access to birth control and choice is a progressive
But here's the thing,
Rachel.
But
he doesn't care.
No, I see. I would disagree a little bit. I think if Bernie Sanders was here right now and you made that argument to him, he would look you in the face and say, "Of course." And I agree with that 100%. And that's why I think he's just a doddering old man. I think he's kind of stumbling around now from one thing to the other. And I don't think he did his homework on the Nebraska guy and his choice policies. And I think when he found that out, the best defense he could come up with, instead of saying, "Well, now I changed my mind," is, "Well, we can't get too bogged down in these purity tests."
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, that's been your whole MO.
Yeah. So don't support John Ossoff, who has like a chance to win the reddest seat in the country, but go find some like garbage Democrat in name only candidate for mayor in Nebraska who supports anti-choice legislation. Well, we can't have purity tests. Like, the fuck.
And this is why his sycophantic people drive me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Because they like parroted that.
Yeah.
They're like, "Oh, no, yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, no, Bernie's right. We can't."
I mean, it is Nebraska. And you're like, it is fucking Georgia.
No, no, but these same people a couple months ago when Manchin and Heitkamp were talking about, "Well, I don't really want to filibuster Gorsuch," right?
Right.
The same people were like, "Okay, now we're going to go after Heitkamp and we're going to go after Manchin. And we were trying to say, you really want to lose, you know, two blue seats in the middle of deep red enclaves? You really want to do that for purity's sake?"
Right.
And now they're making the exact same argument.
I feel like it's just
sycophantic cult of personality. That's what it is.
Exactly. And they're the same as Trump supporters.
Now we've gotten
to
the core.
Same as Trump supporters. It doesn't matter what they
cult.
Do.
It's a
cult of personality. It's a cult. And it doesn't matter what they do or what they say
or make logical sense. Right.
Or if there's any sort of, anything. It just matters. If they said it, I will come up with some justification for why it's okay.
Well, let's go back to the election, right?
Yeah.
And we talk about our old friend Disaster Mouse on Twitter or Susan Sarandon or any of those types.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they said, "Okay, look, this is the way I see it. I would rather have Donald Trump president and let the world burn down and either one or two things happen. Everyone will become so woke that they will realize how terrible conservative ideals is, and they'll get really, really progressive, and we'll have all this wonderful progressive revolution. Or the world will totally burn down, and out of those ashes, we'll have the progressive revolution. Either way, somehow it's better than status quo, liberal-ish, neoliberal Hillary Clinton world." And I said, "I think that's fucking stupid. I think it's fucking horribly privileged.
Amazingly
privileged.
And
I think the collateral damage you let happen from that is goddamn evil."
And it's exactly what's happening.
Well, hold on. And at the end of the day, they were like, "Well, that's how I feel." And I said, "Well, I think that's asinine. I feel the exact other way. and they kind of got their way. And like now it's not even about that anymore, because when the argument changes and to cover his ass, Bernie and his people try to make the same arguments we make back in our face about pragmatism. Like,
yeah.
Then it's like, okay, well, you don't believe in anything.
Right.
You the only thing you believe in is that you decided, I really, really like this guy, and I really, really personally dislike this lady, and that's all that matters.
That's right.
And
now that the world is literally burning down, and we go back to them and we say, this is what you intended? This is the outcome that you intended? This is the thing that you were talking about? This is so much better than Hillary?
Right, when dreamers are getting forcibly deported.
This actual fucking man is the president of the United States. This is what you were
hoping
for.
Jeff Sessions is the actual AG.
Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions is the attorney general. Betsy DeVos. Like, just name all the things. This is better than the alternative, which was to support someone with the most progressive agenda in the history of the Democratic Party.
But my point is, even their asinine, ludicrous excuse for a plan, their quote method, it doesn't even hold now when you put it up to scrutiny. Because it was never actually about that.
No.
It was about, I really, really don't like that Hillary Clinton.
I'm super pissed that Bernie didn't win.
Right.
Sean King is still writing articles like, 2 days ago, he wrote an article that was like, here's how Bernie could have beat Trump. And I'm like, oh my God.
Stop already.
Stop. Because that's not what happened. And Trump's the actual president now.
And I can,
so it doesn't fucking matter.
I can guarantee to you that neither Bernie Sanders nor Hillary Clinton are going to run for president in 2020.
Nope.
So why
stop
are we relitigating
the
this?
Fucking election. It's over. You guys helped to elect Trump. I absolutely put that at the feet of Bernie Sanders. In addition to a bunch of people, but he is for me right now, like, he is absolutely one of the people that I put at the feet that Trump's the president.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. And then I am really struggling though with like the DNC unity tour. He literally just shits on Democrats.
I think that.
And so,
so my theory is I honestly don't think that Tom Perez really gauge just how sort of off the reservation this doddering old guy has gone.
Yeah, and how sycophantic and egomaniacal the election made him. I mean, he literally, like, I feel like Bernie Sanders was a really decent guy, senator from Vermont, and the election and these adoring people and these crowds and all these donations and all of this sort of hero worship just fucked with his head, and he has not gotten over it. And he has become someone that doesn't give a shit about anything except his brand and his sort of like niche and fuck everything else. But I'm Bernie and I have a message.
Uh-huh.
And it's actively hurting people at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it already has, but like this Ossoff thing, he walked it back, right? He said, oh, it's imperative that Ossoff wins this seat in Georgia. Like 3 days later, after the Washington Post posted an article that was basically what I was yelling about the day before,
right,
about like, what the fuck is Bernie Sanders doing? And then like the next day he was like, oh wait, hold on.
I think that was in the Fix, which now that Chris Eliza has left is really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. I'm so fucking sick of this man. I'm so tired of anyone listening to him.
Yeah. Our tolerance has gone really, really short because like I said, if you have a point of view and you have a logical point of view that's consistent, even if we totally disagree with it, there's, I don't know if respect is the word, but at least we get it. We get where you're coming from. When you're just all over the place and contradicting yourself, then it's not about anything.
It's not about anything but you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about you and your whims and your personal
agenda
and feelings and, you know, the cult of personality stuff, right?
Yeah.
And as progressives, we're supposed to be above that, right?
Yes.
Like, plenty of for instances. We love Obama. We were more than happy to call him out on, like, drone policy that we didn't agree with, and foreign policy we didn't agree with, and economic policy we didn't agree with.
And how come it took him so long to support to gays and, like,
yes,
all kinds of shit, right?
Yeah, that is
because it's not about.
And we're not saying everybody did that, because there were plenty of Obama sycophants out there who would excuse anything he did. But the point was, if you're a progressive, it's not about, yes, you can admire and like the people who are elected representatives or who are quote leaders, but they still need to be held to account.
Yes.
And
not by some purity test, but by actual, like, hey, you know, like, I have mad respect for Barack Obama and mm-hmm. adoration and all of that. But yeah, no, I mean, we have done it on this podcast, called him out for some of his bullshit.
Sure. And then in terms of some of the LGBT stuff that he did come around on.
Yes.
Now, you can be cynical and say he always believed it. But either way, he was able to get to that place where he established it in practice because right. of the pressure that progressives put on
him. That's right.
And that should be a lesson that, hey, isn't it a whole lot better if the better candidate doesn't have all your views 100%, but they're in power and then we push them in the direction we want?
And it works?
Rather than burn everything down and rise
from
the chaos?
See if there's a phoenix that rises out of it?
How stupid is that?
It's absolutely... it's stupid and it's irresponsible and it is so fucking privileged.
Well, that's the argument I try to make is like, okay, you disagree with Hillary Clinton substantively on X, Y, and Z. And usually it was very amorphous things like, well, in the crime bill in the 90s, and she said this thing
and
about
she's
super
so connected
predators.
To Wall Street.
Right. It was very yeah. rarely was it, it. Sometimes it was with like trade stuff. But for the most part, it was very sort of amorphous ideas that they're basically the same Republicans. I just don't like her and don't trust her. Right.
Right.
So
right.
I said, okay, well, how about we elect a person that believes in climate change, believes in LGBT rights, believes in criminal justice reform.
Choice,
believes in all these things. And then all the stuff we need to push her to the left on, we do that once, you know, we right. have control of hopefully Congress and the White House. And they said, no, that's not good enough.
It's not good enough. Just elect Donald Trump, burn the world down, and then somehow we'll come to a progressive place.
Yeah.
And in the
meantime, that's literally the plan.
That's exactly right. And in the meantime, everybody who's collateral damage, I don't care.
Basically, yeah.
Everybody who gets affected by this, the dreamers that are getting deported, the Islamic people who
the
are
trans
getting,
kids.
The Islamic people who are getting spit on and abused, the trans people
worse.
In the world, even in our lives.
How about the tons of African American and immigrant and young voters who are gonna get kicked off the voting rolls?
Yeah. I mean literally sessions. Nobody they don't give a shit.
Then how are you gonna get your progressive candidates
fucking
won?
Elections have consequences. And we are seeing that every single day. And that, I think, is where this, like, fury comes from, is we're literally burning the world down. But yeah. I'm watching the collateral damage, and it's fucking heartbreaking.
Well, immediately after the election, I invited some of these people, some of these Bernie or bust people, to come talk yeah. to us
and
debate us.
They would not.
No, they don't.
Nor would the Jill Stein voters.
Oh, please. They don't even admit they're Jill Stein voters. Funny story. Friend of mine who I hope to have on soon, who's an attorney who's representing protesters for the North Dakota pipeline thing,
yes.
which is still a thing that's happening and it's not going
yes.
well and it's kind of horrifying.
Yes.
Had to talk to Jill Stein because Jill Stein got arrested for protesting there.
Wow.
And just kind of reported that Jill Stein is not the brightest.
And
in
also, can you explain this to me with Jill Stein and Putin? Why is she always at dinners with him?
I don't know. Why is she an anti-vaxxer? Explain anything. This lady is a goofball.
And like some close friends of ours like went and rallied and phone banked and voted for her because
she's not Hillary Clinton.
And literally we haven't spoken since the election.
Well, you tried to bring it up, right?
I did.
And they didn't want to talk
about
it.
No, they don't want to talk to me about anything at all. We're not speaking. Because I yelled at them a lot before the election. They were like, no, it's my vote. It's not your vote. She doesn't earn anything. She doesn't owe her anything. And I'm proving a point. And then Donald goddamn Trump's the president. And I'm like, how'd that go?
And they don't want
to
talk about
no,
it.
No, they don't want to talk to me at all.
Well, I think a lot like James Comey, they didn't think it would go this way. So
nope.
They thought they could afford a protest vote.
You can never afford a protest vote.
I hope we learn that. It's like Americans never seem to learn anything. But maybe
well,
we
Ralph
learned
Nader
that.
Proved it first, and then now
yeah,
just
we didn't learn from that
again.
Yeah.
And can you just stop?
Like,
fucking,
what next?
Just vote for the person who's not going to literally burn everything down. Just I don't care if you like John Kerry. I don't give a shit if you like Bill Clinton. I don't care if you like Al Gore. I don't care if you like Hillary Clinton. I don't care. They're not your goddamn buddy. It's better than the alternative.
And
it always is. And if you want a better candidate, this is the other thing I want to say. I was having this conversation with my conservative friend at work. I mean, she was talking about how party politics are so like divided, and like the majority of the country are moderates, and so why can't we bring them to the, like, why are the parties so extreme? And I said, because the base of those parties are the people who
are most passionate,
and they're the people who show up,
right,
who come to the table. I said, if Americans are pissed off about politics because it's so divided and so partisan, show the fuck up. Yeah. Get off your ass, engage in politics. And if most people did that, we would have a very different system than we have now.
But they don't.
But most people are fucking either lazy or stupid or
disinterested.
You know, disinterested.
Bored by politics.
And they don't care. Like, so to Bernie and all of the people out there who are like, well, partisan politics, blah, shut up. If you want to have an impact, show up. Show up to things, call people, engage in the political process, and you have the opportunity to change it. And don't let anyone tell you that's not true, because it's absolutely true.
To people's credit, and it also a little maddening too, I keep seeing articles like this, in the first few months of the Trump administration, people now have become more engaged than like they've ever been, and
yes,
which is great.
I mean, it is great, and I fully encourage it, and thank you very much. In my private space, sometimes I'm like, fuck you.
Well, right.
Where were you November 7th?
You could have become very, very politically active back in August.
Or how about just vote?
Like, because I think the media did a really good job of, they found a fun narrative of like, nobody likes either of these candidates.
They're the worst.
Both awful.
The two worst candidates in any America. No!
And that started to filter through to people, and it's like, yeah, I don't like either of these candidates.
So just fuck it, I'm not gonna vote.
Yeah,
but okay, well, you're welcome. Here we go. Is this what you wanted? Because you deciding that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were equivalent?
Well, there was,
does that seem serious now?
There was also a side narrative of like, well, Trump can't win, it's gonna be Hillary.
Yeah, so why bother?
Yeah,
it's gonna be Hillary, who I hate,
who I don't like, so I won't even show up and
vote. But she's gonna win anyway, so I'm just gonna protest vote, or I'm just gonna stay home, or I'm just gonna stop paying attention. And right, what we got is Donald Trump. So thanks, everybody. Sorry if we're scoldy. It's just, come on. And Bernie just needs to go the fuck away. Anyway, let's move on. There's lots to talk about.
Sure. Well, in recent days, there's been heightened tensions with North Korea.
Yeah.
And a very skeptical person can say it's a great distraction from all the Russia stuff, yep, and all the other crap, all the other buzzards that are sort of swarming around Trump. I don't know what to say about this other than a lot of people misunderstand North Korea. A lot of people misunderstand the capabilities and intentions of North Korea. There's always been a lot of fear-mongering when it comes to North Korea. And I think, unfortunately, the president and the people close to him don't really understand Korea any better.
Right.
Here's the fact of the matter. North Korea, although they're a horribly impoverished nation, yes, has developed the capacity for nuclear weapons.
Yes.
Now, they don't have the best delivery systems for those nuclear weapons. That's why those tests are always failing.
Yeah.
We think they could potentially launch a nuclear attack of some sort on South Korea and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It's exceedingly unlikely they would ever do that, because that would be utter suicide.
But what I would say is, with nuclear weapons, we've always had this policy of mutually assured destruction, right?
Yeah.
Anyone who has a nuke understands that if they set one off, we'll do it back and vice versa. Well, everybody's dead.
That has been basically what has kept the peace since the 50s, really.
Right. But that assumes...
between the former Soviet Union and the satellite states and the United States and their allies.
But that assumes that we are dealing with rational actors. That assumes that the people that have these nukes understand the concept of mutually assured destruction and care that their people and themselves and the world would potentially blow up.
And now you have Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump.
And Donald Trump. So we, like, have zero rational actors at this point, and it's goddamn terrifying. Now, yeah. They're threatening, like, we're going to burn the U.S. down.
Well,
like,
they've always
done
that.
They have no capacity to launch a nuclear weapon at the United States and have it hit us. That they just don't have the technological...
They're working on it, but they don't have it yet.
They don't, right? They could absolutely blow up Japan. And then that requires a response from us and a large part of the rest of the world. I think we're in a situation that is a little bit more tenuous than we've been in a long time.
Because
you have two giant egos of people who don't really understand how the world works, kind of battling each other in the press.
No, but the worst part is you have an administration where the president says one thing and then he's immediately contradicted by his ambassador to the UN, who's then immediately contradicted by the Secretary of State. It's like you can never get one coherent answer or policy.
Yeah.
And so if you're a hostile foreign leader and you're trying to read our intentions, which is really, really important, guys.
Really important.
Go back and read about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes. Or what's that movie we watched that was so good?
13 Days about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
About how all of this is reading your opponent's intentions, basically.
Yes.
And relying on the fact that they are a rational actor.
Yes.
And so when you're getting wildly divergent stories, which some people think is even more terrifying, is actually Donald Trump's strategy is just to confuse the shit out of hostile foreign powers with nuclear weapons, which seems insane to me.
But then
we're talking about President Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. So what? The elections matter.
So, I mean, like, I guess it doesn't matter. Either they are so disorganized and discombobulated that different stories that contradict each other come out hour after hour about really important tense situations around
Donald
the world.
Donald Trump says some shit and the important, like, the smart people around him are like, fuck, fix it. And then they're like, no, I want to do this and I want to do this. And nobody cares what he said because he's a goddamn nightmare. And so the people that are running these agencies that are, like, you know, generals and shit are saying stuff that one guy has one opinion and one guy has another one, and there's no leadership. It's just tweeting.
Meanwhile, there's infighting. There's lack of cohesion between the intelligence agencies in the White House.
Yeah.
There's
it's
McMaster
serious.
Fighting with the Trump sycophants. There's Steve Bannon wrestling with Kushner. And it's just like, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. It really is.
So that's what's frightening.
Yes.
It's not so much that North Korea has the capacity to start dropping nuclear weapons on the United States, because they don't. And I think they understand that it would be just as self-annihilating to start dropping nuclear weapons on South Korea or Japan. But the fact is, accidents can happen. Things can get out of control pretty quickly.
And Kim Jong-un isn't that different from Trump.
I think he is.
You do?
Yeah. I think he's actually got a lot more common sense than Trump. And I think there's actually a method to his madness. The saber rattling serves a purpose, and it always has. And his father knew that, and his grandfather knew that. Remember, it was Kim Il-sung that was first, with the Clinton administration, able to get some big reductions in sanctions and some aid that slowed their nuclear ambitions. And then very soon, Kim Il-sung died, and it was Kim Jong-il who took over.
Crazy person.
Not that crazy, because he basically kept along the same path until George W. Bush came to office and said, we can't have this deal with North Korea, and basically tore it up and, like, put them in the same category as Al-Qaeda.
And, like, the sanctions
and isolated
are extraordinary.
Them. Yeah.
And they are, literally, their people are starving and dying in the streets. And that's not the fault of the United States, certainly.
No,
but
that's more to do with the Kim regime.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now we've come to a place where, I mean, the point is, though, that the saber rattling has always been sort of a tactic. It's to keep the people in line, to sort of try to keep Japan and South Korea on edge, to sort of force the hand of, because here's the reality. And again, I've said this again and again, if you understand some of the geopolitics and some of the military aspects of this, North Korea has the ability to launch nuclear weapons, launch a very devastating, quick, conventional strike against its neighbors or allies, or not its allies, its neighbors,
mm-hmm.
but does not have the capacity for any sort of sustained military conflict.
No, at all.
No, not. They don't have the fuel. No. They don't have the means of transportation.
No. They don't have the... No, absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
They can do like a thing, but if they do, they know
not like over. Not like 1950 in the Korean conflict.
No,
they couldn't possibly do that.
No. Absolutely not. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Well, I'm sure Trump doesn't know that. I'm sure Trump doesn't understand that. Kim Jong-un understands it. So I think Kim Jong-un is probably a lot more rational than Trump. And you don't get mixed messages from Pyongyang. No. You get the same message over and over, which is we will lay waste to all our enemies and it will be a lake of glorious fire that all our enemies will perish in. And but that's always been their shtick, right?
Yes.
So whether you believe it or not, you understand where they're coming from. We're belligerent and we're hostile. And if cornered, we will strike.
Yes.
Whereas if Kim Jong-un is trying to now read the new American leader, what the fuck are they going
to
do?
And then Daddy Pence goes to the DMZ and is like, the time for patience with this is over.
Right. So what is
Trump
he trying to say?
Trump has been clear. This is not okay. And you're like, wait, so we're going to war?
Right, right. Is what is he saying?
Did you just declare war on North Korea? And then what are we doing?
And then an hour later, Tillerson kind of tries to walk it back. Yeah. Or,
and you're like, wait. What the fuck is his policy on North Korea?
And this
what
is it? And this is a daily thing with foreign policy.
Yeah.
Whether it's on Syria, whether it's on Iran, whether it's on Russia, whether it's on Venezuela, whether it's on whoever. Like, we can't get a consistent policy message on anything, and that's
because we don't have one. Because
we either don't have one because Trump actually believes in his chaos theory that if you're so unpredictable, then you'll keep them in line, or that the one hand actually doesn't know what the other's doing. Either are feasible, and either are terrifying, and either are massively destabilizing.
Yes,
which if you've studied international relations, which I have, that's what leads to wars.
Well, you have your degree in that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what leads to wars. That's what leads to bloodshed. That's what leads to tragic errors.
Correct.
And that is what is coming from Washington. So sleep tight. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Bill O'Reilly and some other stuff. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. To Irreverent Testimony. It's a bit of breaking news last night and this morning that the Surgeon General has been fired or asked to resign by Trump. Didn't know much about that, so I found a story on USA Today, and I'll just read it real quick. Surgeon General dismissed, replaced by Trump administration. Dr. Vivek Murthy was dismissed April 21st. Didn't know a ton about this guy. I know he was very keen on... Obama appointed him because he's very keen on saying gun violence and gun accidents is a real public health nuisance.
Yes.
Which pissed off the NRA people.
Yes.
Because how dare this guy say, I would rather your children not get shot in the face by guns?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How dare you say that?
Can't talk about guns.
Anyway, so this is hot off the presses. The White House administration on Friday dismissed U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, saying it is continuing the process of transitioning to new leadership. Today, Dr. Murthy, the leader of the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps, was asked to resign from his duties as Surgeon General after assisting in a smooth transition into the new Trump administration, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said in a statement. Dr. Murthy has been relieved of his duties as Surgeon General and will continue to serve as a member of the Commission Corps. You might say that's C-O-R-P-S,
yeah,
right?
I would say Corps, but yeah.
The statement continued, Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price thanks him for his dedicated service to the nation. Rear Admiral Sylvia Trent Adams, who is currently Deputy Surgeon General, will serve as the Acting Surgeon General and assume leadership of the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps. Trent Adams, whose picture and name already were up on the Surgeon General Twitter account Friday evening, has served in the Public Health Service Corps for more than 24 years, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. She previously was chief nurse officer for that agency, the deputy associate administrator for the HIV/AIDS Bureau at the Department of Health and Human Services, and nurse officer in the Army.
So she'll probably get fired too.
Oh yeah, no, she's just temp, but she's obviously qualified.
Obviously, she'd probably be great, but...
Murthy, 39, was the 19th Surgeon General of the United States. He was a native of the UK and a graduate of Harvard College, as well as the Yale University Schools of Medicine and Business. Wow. Yeah. Med and business. A vice admiral and research scientist, he is known for his concerns regarding emotional well-being. At a recent conference on behavioral health in Seattle, he said, "We forget some of the oldest medicines are love and compassion."
Aww.
Yeah, of course. That's of course true. We need to fire this guy.
Yeah, let's
what
fire
a
him.
Dick. On his webpage, he describes himself as a physician, entrepreneur, grassroots organizer, mango aficionado, and dreamer.
Aww.
I like mangoes too. He was confirmed on December 14th, 2014, and co-founded Visions, an HIV/AIDS educational program in India and the United States. He also co-founded Swastia, a community health partnership in rural India. Murthy could not immediately be reached. Trent Adams is a graduate of Hampton University, as well as the University of Maryland, Baltimore, where she earned a doctoral degree, as well as a Master of Science in Nursing and Health Policy.
So do we think, I mean, obviously she's going to get fired because she sounds amazing. Who does he replace her with? Let's say
if he replaces her with somebody that's qualified and is just his guy, that's fine. If he replaces...
No, what does he do?
I don't
know. He replaces people with people who hate the agency they're about to run. So let's say Surgeon General... Like, so Jeff Sessions sort of is in charge of civil rights in the country and is like
right.
a racist piece
right.
of shit.
And he hates
right,
civil
right.
rights.
Right. So Surgeon General, let's say...
Cares a lot about public health.
Anti-vaxxer.
That's what I'm worried about.
Anti-vaxxer.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Well, let me bring up a couple things.
Just put Jill Stein there. She says
she'd do it.
Connections to Putin.
She helped
him
win
the
White
election.
House. Yeah.
She's an anti-vaxxer who has no knowledge of public health, although apparently she's a doctor.
Yeah.
She's perfect for the Trump administration.
Some doctors are a little nutty.
Attorney General. Yeah. No matter what.
Some doctors
industry,
are a little goofy.
You're talking about. There's always going to be some wackadoos.
Some nutters, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, look, here's a couple things that I know about this guy, and you can connect the dots any way you want. He very recently penned an article and sort of made an announcement regarding the dangers of vaping.
Ah.
He has recently sort of got more aggressive in going after anti-vaxxers. We mentioned that.
Great.
And as we spoke about before... one of the reasons Obama appointed him was that he's very passionate about trying to make gun safety and the epidemic of gun violence into a real public health issue and not so much a partisan political
right.
issue.
Right. Because it makes sense. We don't talk about it as a public health issue for
and
reasons that are entirely
is.
Political, but it obviously is, considering
yeah.
the amount of people who die from gun violence.
Mm-hmm. Especially young people and children.
Yeah, it should absolutely be a public health issue.
So this announcement on the day of the March for Science, the Surgeon General
is
booted
out.
Definitely
going to be an anti-vaxxer, right?
I think the world would melt down if he tried to do that. I at least would hope so. I mean, that's when I get on a plane and go to Washington, because I couldn't with that.
I mean,
that is dangerous. That's more dangerous than the North Korea shit.
That's
we're
your
about.
Jeff Sessions. That would be for you.
That's the world's Jeff Sessions.
No, I know. I'm just saying, for you as a person who works in public health and has your master's in public health.
That's my ultimate red line.
Right.
An anti-vaxxer, a Surgeon General, is one of the more horrifying.
So for me,
ideas.
It's Jeff Sessions, and for you, it's an anti-vaxxer as a Surgeon General. It's equivalent in terms of the impact that it could have on the actual world.
I am not putting, and I would hope at that point that Congress would, okay, no, we can't rubber stamp this. No. But who knows? Who knows? Paul Ryan doesn't believe in anything.
Nope.
So
if he wants a pandemic
and a third of the world population to die.
The libertarian mentality around vaccines is very like...
It's kind of murky.
It's very like personal freedom, personal choice. The government has no right to tell you blah, blah, blah. So if you think vaccines... This is the thing that, speaking on March for Science Day. This is the thing that makes me so crazy is like, look, if you don't think vaccines are good for your kids, that's your choice.
It's live
like,
in a bubble.
No, because you live in a society
right.
where other people exist.
Herd immunity, and things yes, like that.
Yes, and your decision and your belief in science doesn't, you don't have to believe in it for it to be true. And your non-belief in it and therefore choice to not vaccinate your children has actual real world impacts on everyone else. It's not like I believe in God or I don't, or, you know, I don't believe in climate change, but I'm just a Joe on the street. Like this is, you're choosing not to vaccinate your child, which could potentially kill children and people and create an epidemic of something that does not need to exist.
Yeah.
Like, we've already solved this problem
yeah.
with science, and your belief in science has no bearing on whether or not science is
and
true.
You have avian flu, which is an issue in China. You know, we're only a couple more years removed from the Ebola panic.
I had the swine flu.
How do you know it was the swine flu?
Because there was an outbreak at the college that I went to, and I absolutely had it. And I had a fever of like 104 for 5 days that wouldn't go. I should have gone to the hospital.
Did
it was
you
a
feel
nightmare.
Like a swine?
I felt like I was going to die. I literally had to put like ice on my face. It was horrible. Both Dana and I had it. And the college at the time, because they had the outbreak... was right at the beginning of the school year, and they said, literally, don't come to the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can do, and you showing up is just going to infect other people because it was so highly
So they didn't
infectious.
Have Tamiflu or anything?
No, they were like, if you get really bad, go to the hospital.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
It was bad. But anyway.
Well, anyway, we don't know. I mean, it could be that Trump just wants his guy, and it could be the gun thing, which is still bad, but... I am worried and yeah. I will go. Oh, now he hasn't done it yet, so I don't want to jump the gun.
Yep.
He might not be an anti-vaxxer at all. Might be somebody that's very, very qualified.
I hope so.
But we'll see. It is something to keep an eye on that is not yeah. going to get a lot of press.
I'm not saying like we know for sure it's going to be an anti-vaxxer.
No,
just
no,
given
we have no
his
idea.
Other appointments.
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
thinking worst case scenario, if he goes the way he's been going, that'd be the worst case for me.
So we touched on North Korea a little. Pence is over in that part of the world, rattling a saber, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And let's move on to O'Reilly.
Yeah.
O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly. Best news of the week.
Yeah, sort of. I have mixed feelings because he got a nice $25 million golden parachute, which is apparently equivalent to like 1 year's salary.
Yeah.
Jesus. Are we in the wrong business?
Yes.
Are we pandering to the wrong people?
We are. So we're in the same business. We're just pandering to
yeah.
the wrong people.
Right.
Yeah.
We make so much money if we were just for right-wing imbeciles.
Yeah, right? God.
So, why don't you progressives send us your money?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you've done a little bit with the...
So Bill O'Reilly,
we'll send you snake oil diabetes pills.
Sure, I make
male
some shit
enhancement.
In my kitchen and
yeah.
tell you it'll do a thing. It's fine. Buy gold. no, Bill O'Reilly though.
Yeah.
The sort of original super famous.
Well, I think Limbaugh is the original.
Sure, but he never got on like a major news network.
No, that's true. No, that's not true. He had his show was on a network for a while.
Really?
He had a like a daytime talk show with awful right wing douchebaggery.
On what network?
It was right before Clinton got elected. ABC, NBC. I don't know. It didn't last very long. It was a nightmare.
But Bill O'Reilly's kind of like
Bill O'Reilly was either he was or he was vying to be an anchor. I think he was an anchor. No, he was a reporter for a short time. And he cut his teeth in the Falklands War. It's good to go back and listen to that podcast with Jeb Lund and J.W. Friedman about O'Reilly's novel, which is a little
yes,
scary.
Which is one of the best podcasts ever.
But the story is about a news guy who gets fired and then goes on a murder spree. So now I'm a little worried. You know, O'Reilly's a little old now, but
so Bill O'Reilly
probably still got
fired,
the energy.
Is the point.
Now
yeah.
he's going to go murder Bob Schieffer with a spoon.
I don't know. I mean, we do need to talk about this because a good friend of ours asked the other day, so why did he get fired? What happened? So maybe people...
Who asked? Which one?
just, it doesn't matter.
I seriously don't know.
It's just not maybe everybody doesn't know. So back in the day, I think everyone remembers the like falafel loofah something thing, right?
Let me look that up, see if I can find a transcript.
Yeah. Basically, he's a sexually harassing, rapey fuck. And a bunch of women came out and said, there's like, I think there were like 13 allegations. I'm not exactly sure. You're looking it up. That he is exactly what you'd think he is, which is a misogynistic, sexual harassing, potentially rapey dude. And as the allegations started racking up and the public outrage started racking up, his advertisers started dropping out. We're talking about big name people. And what I think is important to note is that his viewership did not go down. The reason he is fired is not because it's awful that he's rapey and people stopped watching his show. The reason he is fired is because it's awful that he's rapey and advertisers looked at the allegations and looked at the public outcry and said, I don't want my business associated with that. And so he lost like, I think it was like 16 different major advertisers on Fox News.
Okay, well, let me jump in here and sort of remind you how this all got started way back in the day, way before any of his current slew of accusers. And then just remember that back in the day, O'Reilly was able to do all this and keep his job for the next 12, 13 years. So I'm reading a Smoking Gun article from a couple of years ago when the Bill O'Reilly falafel lawsuit turned 10. So on this date in 2004, which this is a couple years ago now, Bill O'Reilly was accused of sexual harassment by Andrea Macris, an associate producer who worked with the TV host at Fox News Channel. Obviously not the first woman he sexually harassed, but the first one who got
had
him
the
in.
Balls to come out.
Yeah.
Not to say that people who didn't come out didn't have the balls. I'm just saying, she had actual evidence so that she wasn't lampooned in the media by saying she's making it up. She had like video record or audio recordings.
Oh, well, here we go. Let me remind some people in case you forgot. Because a lot of the details get lost, and all we hear about was, like, there's been things about him calling his African American coworker hot chocolate, which some people roll their eyes at and say, "Why is that a big deal?"
But also then making monkey sounds at her.
Oh, there's plenty more. But anyway, let's get back to the good stuff because people forget all this for some reason. Macris's New York State Supreme Court complaint is bursting with examples of the 65-year-old O'Reilly's alleged sleaziness. Remember, this is a couple years ago now, so he's 67 now, I think. Which apparently was surreptitiously memorialized via Macris's tape recorder. The lawsuit was settled within 2 weeks, and the parties agreed to confidentiality provisions intended to shroud O'Reilly's purported pervy ways. The legal statement reported included a fat check for the 43-year-old Macris, who said that O'Reilly could be, quote, paternal and engaging, and then, quote, tyrannical and menacing. So like most people's
that
dads.
That sounds about right.
Just kidding. A decade later, Macris's complaint, filed by attorney Benedict Morelli, remains a better read than any of O'Reilly's subsequent bestsellers, mainly because the lawsuit includes such topics as vibrators. I'm sure he knows so much about vibrators, don't you? Don't you want vibrator advice for Bill O'Reilly? Masturbation lessons.
Oh, what is that?
He's going to teach you how to, what's a term for good slang, female term for it?
Rubbing one out.
To teach you how to rub one out?
Yeah.
That's same with dudes. Isn't there a better, like, specifically female masturbation slang? Like, we got choking the chicken and walking the dog.
Yeah,
and
we don't get lots, but rubbing one out's, like, pretty specific to women.
Really? Because I've heard that plenty and associated with dudes, too.
No.
Okay. Phone sex. A, quote, short brown Balinese woman who allegedly was, quote, amazed when she saw O'Reilly's penis.
God, this is so gross.
Which means he probably paid for it, like, at a brothel in Bali.
I need you to say this to me. I really need you to tell me that, like...
Doesn't he realize so that amazed. They get paid for every American tourist? Oh, so big.
Oh, it's... incredible. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I've never seen one that big.
Uh-huh.
I like how he thought Macris was going to be impressed that some Balinese woman that for a happy ending was like, impressed about how big his dick was.
He told... Oh my God. The fuck?
We're just getting started. I like how he commented on the Balinese woman as being short and brown. Like, okay.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for that sexting. That's super fucking racist. I love it. Brown woman said my dick was big. Oh my God, I'm so wet right now.
A short brown woman that he very obviously paid to do whatever it was the poor woman had to do to him.
And you tell that to another woman that you're trying to fuck. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Why didn't it work, Rachel?
It's amazing. It's amazing that she didn't just immediately drop to her knees.
Well, Andrea Macris, I don't think he's neither short nor brown, so maybe it just didn't click culturally way it does with short brown Balinese women. Okay, more. Threesomes.
Oh, good. His idea of that must be, he's definitely never had one. And his idea.
No, I'm sure he's had one.
Well, he maybe paid for one.
Well, sure. Well, he could pay for one. Or I'm sure he has enough hangers on or
no.
Women that thought he would help advance their careers or something.
No.
You don't think he's had like a willing threesome?
No.
Like he just fell into bed with two ladies he was wining and dining?
Definitely not.
What if in his younger days, like his college days?
No.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not.
He's a rich guy. Rich guys have a tendency to get.
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right. But he's got advice on him.
Well, I'm sure.
There's a link
he's
here.
He's watched a lot of
them. There's a link here.
Uh-oh.
So let's see where this takes us. Unless this is just like Smoking Gun's generic threesome link and all the threesome scandals. Okay. Now here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
This is from the actual legal complaint.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
During the course of this dinner, because it was some dinner that they were having, on May 2003, defendant Bill O'Reilly, without solicitation or invite, regaled plaintiff and her friend with stories concerning the loss of his virginity to a girl in a car at JFK. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. At least he didn't say his friend in Canada.
I love that he's saying this to two women because we're about to get to threesome territory.
Yeah, hold on.
He's saying it to her and her friend. Let's just
two note. Quote really wild Scandinavian airline stewardesses he had gotten together with, and a quote girl at a sex show in Thailand who had shown him things in the back room that quote blew his mind.
Okay, men like in what, red like woolen nipple shirts. Rings? Are doing things behind closed doors that Bill O'Reilly can't imagine. So blowing his mind must not. But I love that it's two Scandinavian. Okay.
Oh, right.
Let's just do this really quick.
I think he just watched like a Whitesnake video.
Two Scandinavian airline hostesses are who he had a threesome with.
Well, I thought it was two wild girls.
Small brown woman said his dick was big. So the fantasy and then the racist reality. It's just. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we? With the sex show in Thailand? And
yeah,
the
blew his mind.
Okay. Defendant then stated he was going to Italy to meet the Pope, that his pregnant wife was staying at home with his daughter, and implied he was looking forward to some extramarital dalliances with the, quote, hot Italian women. Both plaintiff and her friend were repulsed, as one might be.
Well,
anything could be in a legal brief, but I bet this is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
But felt powerless to protest against strongly since defendant was plaintiff's boss and a powerful man at Fox. Mm-hmm. Defendant finally stopped after noting Macris can't handle it. Okay.
Can't
Oh wait, I guess I skipped over the threesome part.
Yeah.
Because there's a paragraph before this. On or about May 2003, defendant Bill O'Reilly took plaintiff Andrea Macris and her college friend to dinner at DeSilvano's. During the course of dinner, O'Reilly repeatedly propositioned the woman, mm-hmm. singing the praises of telephone sex, offering to telephone them both, and suggesting that the three of them go to a hotel together and have the time of their lives. Well, it'll be the time of your life. O'Reilly further suggested that the women needed to be trained so they'd be equipped and ready to go when a, quote, real man shows up in your lives, end quote.
I literally want to throw your phone across the room.
And offered, quote, lessons. O'Reilly further suggested that they use their sexuality to their advantage so they'd have power over men. Otherwise, men would have power over them. Pl- plaintiff was extremely embarrassed and protested, "Bill, you're my boss."
Okay. I
I'm glad I found this article. Because people forget this stuff. Like, this was all public domain. And now keep in mind, after all this, he kept his job on the air as the voice of the conservative movement for another 12, 13 years.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, where were we? Oh, the loss of O'Reilly's virginity in a car at JFK Airport, which I don't believe for a second. Sex with two Scandinavian stewardesses, which I don't believe for a second.
Not even for, no.
A Thai sex show, which is plausible because he could pay for it.
Definitely.
Something about Al Franken.
What?
Oh, God. O'Reilly's masturbation.
I can't.
O'Reilly's climaxing.
I can't.
Caribbean shower fantasies. Well, that's the falafel,
like,
right?
I'm gonna
puke. Well, Caribbean shower well, that's the falafel's not Caribbean. It's Middle Eastern.
Yes.
But no, he was talking about that they would fly down to the Caribbean and then he would touch her boobs in the shower, basically.
But he said falafel and
rubber
instead of
pussy
loofah.
With a falafel.
Oh God, it's just it can't.
No, well,
so
first, see, I remember it. First he said loofah. Then he forgot and said falafel.
Also, what are you doing with a loofah? No, that's not a thing.
You don't get turned on. Loofah is not a sex toy?
No. The fuck?
Are you saying that O'Reilly doesn't understand the female anatomy?
No, he can teach me. His lessons.
I mean, look, he's been with short brown Balinese women. He's had two Scandinavian stewardesses in the
same
in the car at JFK something.
Some, yeah, no, it's just fucking horrifying.
One of those mitts, those loofah mitts.
Why? Why? Seriously.
What does he mean by mitt? Like, is there a kind of loofah that goes over your hand?
Yeah, they like make, yeah. But it's to wash. You just, what? No. Okay. Just pro tip.
Sponges don't make good sex toys.
Like rough sponges, probably not a great idea.
No.
Oh, God.
So even if it was a guy you were really attracted to, and he's like, maybe I want to rub you with the loofah.
Your kink is not my kink, but your kink is okay. But like,
no, but for you, but
generally speaking, yeah, not a great first. Like, here's how women. No, just maybe pro tip for anybody who didn't know.
Well, that was like the part from
a loofah mitt isn't a great sex toy.
Well, the part from his book where he's a serial killer is that the great sex scene is with his tongue inside her moving around rapidly.
Which we can get into, but that is also not how that is done. Your tongue does not become your dick. Just saying. It's a whole other thing that we're doing. It's
and the woman's anatomy is different.
You're doing it wrong, sir. You're doing it wrong. Just let me put that out there.
Woo.
Anyway.
Falafel. Ugh. O'Reilly's quote, big cock, more vibrator-aided ejaculation. Wait a minute. Who's ejaculating?
Hold on, what?
Well, there's a link.
Oh, my God.
This might be our last podcast ever. We've enjoyed you listening to a reverent testimony. Netroots Radio has decided to go in a different direction. Hey, this is stuff in public domain. We're just reading. During the course of this monologue, okay, well, this part starts off with plaintiff Andrea Macris was frightened and disturbed, which we are as
God.
Well.
Yes.
During the course of this monologue, defendant Bill O'Reilly suggested that he would perform oral sex upon plaintiff Andrea Macris, and then she would start to perform fellatio upon his big cock, but not complete the sex act. So, I mean, is he talking about 69, or is he just magically she's going to...
I don't...
He's not specifying.
I'm concerned and disturbed. Continue, I guess.
Then he'd say, you'd tease me, like you wouldn't really do it. You'd just like, because I know you, you're like a tease. During the course of his perverted ravings, this is a legal brief, defendant Bill O'Reilly told plaintiff that they would then engage in sexual intercourse. Well, at least he's putting sexual intercourse after foreplay. So that's something.
I don't think he knows how it works. But
No. But at least he knows like there is a thing.
There's a thing
that's called
before you put the thing in the thing.
Yeah.
You put other things in it first, I guess. And
falafels. And
yeah. All right. Oven mitts.
when plaintiff Andrea Macris again reminded defendant O'Reilly that she did not want to participate, reminding him that he was only her boss, O'Reilly responded, "You just have to suspend that." Well, during the course of defendant Bill O'Reilly's sexual rant, it became clear that he was using a vibrator upon himself and that he ejaculated. Hold on a second.
Wait a minute. While he was talking to her? Is this on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. So he's into butt stuff. Or he's like just putting it on his dick?
I think he's using a vibrator on his dick.
Okay.
Which I'm not gonna get too personal, but
I don't know.
For most guys it doesn't really do much.
Okay.
It doesn't work the same way.
Yeah,
it's not a thing.
Okay.
But hey, O'Reilly's getting in touch with this other side of something. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
we're gonna have to put a disclaimer on the, I'll warn Justice.
This one's sexually explicit. Sorry.
It's not our fault. We're not making this stuff up. We didn't say it.
It's an illegal brief. We're just reading about it.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, it became clear that O'Reilly was using a vibrator upon himself and that he ejaculated. Plaintiff was repulsed.
Yes, as am I.
I want to know
so
how
bad for this woman. Like, can you imagine?
Horrified.
Like, how many times do I have to say, "You're my fucking boss, stop being gross"?
Right, and when her phone rings.
Oh my God.
And you're the producer of the show.
It's just like white hot.
But
anxiety.
She has to answer the phone.
Yeah.
Because there's, I'm sure, a decent enough chance it has something to do with the show. It has something to do with business.
Yeah.
But then she knows it could be him just trying to perv out again.
Jerking off with a vibrator, talking about how he's going to use a falafel. Like, it's funny because it's disgusting, but it's also fucking horrifying for her.
And this was only someone who came forward and that we know all the details about.
That's right. And then there's all the other women that came forward and who knows how many others there are that have no intention of doing so.
Oh boy. Okay. Immediately after climaxing, defendant Bill O'Reilly launched into a discussion concerning how good he was during a recent appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
God, of course he did.
It was funny. They used a big clip of me right after Brokaw, and Brokaw was absolutely the most unfunny guy in the world, and the audience got a big change out of my, "It was good." After climaxing, defendant Bill O'Reilly again boasted that none of the women he'd engaged in sexual relations with would ever tell. Well, but wait, if he's trying to brag, I guess that's very convenient, right?
That well, all these what he's saying to her is, "I've done this before, and they didn't say shit, and neither are you."
But they haven't even done anything. This is just him perving out to her.
Right. And he's saying,
he's laying the groundwork and saying, like, once you give in to me, you better keep your mouth shut.
You're going to keep your mouth shut about this.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to keep your mouth shut about everything else because that's what women in my life do.
Yeah. Well, how'd that work out?
Well,
no, but it's also very convenient when you go, all these women all over the world, I have the golden cock and I gave them the best sex of my life, but very conveniently they will never ever
tell. They'll never tell anyone ever because it definitely didn't happen. But seriously, that's what it is. It's a threat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a threat.
Nobody would believe them. They wouldn't tell anyway. Yep. I can't imagine any of them ever doing that because I always made friends with women before I bedded them down.
I bedded them down? God.
Well, it's your grandpa, essentially, you know, talking about his exploits when he was, you know, overseas stationed in Germany or whatever. Defendant Bill O'Reilly concluded stating, "You know, Macris, in these days of your celibacy and your hibernation, this is good for you to have a little fantasy outlet."
Okay, this is not her fucking fantasy outlet, by the way. I'm assure you.
But he's that much of an egomaniac. That while
he's just doing her a favor by telling her disgusting things because it's definitely her fantasy, not his.
No. Now, like, obviously, I mean, he is the irresistible Bill O'Reilly, the most attractive.
I just did you a favor. This is exactly how rape culture works.
Yes.
This is exactly how it works.
To a T.
It is. And I want to talk about that for a minute because it's not just Bill O'Reilly. And that's one thing that happened back in whatever. Now there have been dozens of women that have come forward causing him to lose his job, right? And what I was saying before you started reading that was, it's not because viewership went down.
No.
His viewers are loyal. His viewership is fine.
He brought in like 8 or 9 figures a year in advertising revenue to Fox.
But that's not what, those are two separate things.
Sure.
The number of people who watched him has not gone down.
No.
The reason he was fired isn't because people were so disgusted by him
that they
stopped watching.
No, it was advertisers.
Advertisers have started to understand that women in this country hold greater spending power than men.
Oh, yes.
And they said, I can't have my brand associated with this fucking rapey asshole. And so it's an interesting lesson. Donald Trump was elected by voters in the Electoral College, right? And Bill O'Reilly still has viewers.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same people, I think. The people who continue to watch Bill O'Reilly, regardless of how he...
Like my dad.
Mm-hmm. Mine too. And the people who voted for Donald Trump, regardless of grab their pussies. But the larger culture and advertisers and sort of the conversation that we have publicly about sexual assault and consent and sexual harassment and that kind of stuff led advertisers, led companies to say, I don't want my brand associated with that.
That's bad for our business.
The only reason he got fired was because of advertisers.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
That's it.
Let's not lose sight of that. There's two lessons there, right?
Yes.
There's the very cynical lesson in which this is all revolves around goddamn money, not right and wrong.
Correct.
But B, hey, we can use this.
Yes.
And we did it against Limbaugh.
Yes.
In the wake of the... Now, Limbaugh still has a show, but it's much, much harder for him to get advertising revenue now. Yeah. In the wake of the Sandra Fluke stuff.
Yes.
And now with O'Reilly, he's gone. He's off the air. Now, we're not arbitrary... Now, that was going to be their big defense. It's a liberal left-wing conspiracy to get us off the air because the Bloom, the lawyer, and Media Matters has made it clear, yeah, we want his ass off the air. Here's why.
Right.
It's not like we're arbitrarily going, like, we think Sean Hannity's a disgusting, awful piece of shit.
Right.
But we're not necessarily organizing to tell advertisers to yank his shit off the air because he's not doing this.
Right.
Now, it's like, it's not arbitrary. I mean, like.
Right. But the other thing I want to say is looking at Fox News as an organization. In order for Bill O'Reilly to have gotten away with this back then, and then for it to continue to have happened, for Roger Ailes to do the things that he's done, for these accusations to come out of this organization, it's not shocking to me at all, but I think it's worth noting that when you create a culture of it's permissible to treat women this way, it's permissible to not even just like everyday sexual harassment, but literally calling your producer and jerking off on the phone while talking about like Scandinavian, like that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be an environment that is created that is so far beyond permissible of sexual harassment that there's literally an understanding, not just among the men that work there, but among the women too. The women understand.
Yeah, that is not permissible. That's not normal.
Everything is okay. And no one's going to get punished. There's no one you can go to.
Right.
There's nothing you can do. If you want to move up in your career and you want to work for this incredibly, it has the highest viewership of any news network. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to move up and you want your career to be bettered, there's an understanding that exists among the women that work there that you're going to put up with this. And not just a little. It's not just your boss being like, hey, nice tits.
Yeah.
It's way beyond that.
Oh,
For him to get away with that level of shit means that the entire organization has a culture that was created that means that it is absolutely permissible and there's nothing that can be done.
And let's be clear. When Andrea Macris won her lawsuit, her career basically ended that day.
Yes.
And there have been some follow-ups about her and she's not really doing... Yeah, she's got money, but she's not doing great.
No.
Her career's over. She's been dealing with depression.
Because she's a tattletale.
Well, there's a million reasons why this has affected her negatively.
Right. But I think the culture has changed.
Well, sure. But my point was this. The settlement was like half a year of his salary, which sounds bad. But when you're already rich as hell and, you know, you're bringing in 8 figures a year, you know, not to mention outside deals and endorsements or advertising, whatever the hell he profits. It's a drop in the bucket. It's not even the cost of doing business. It's like almost a write-off. I don't think he did write it off, but...
I also read a statistic the other day, and I don't know the exact numbers, but essentially what it said was the amount of what you would call like a golden parachute that they've given to these men that they have let go is, I think, five times
what they've paid out to victims.
What they've paid to the women who've reported them.
Yeah.
Now, I would say this, that I think since this Andrea, what's her name?
Macris.
Since her time, as compared to now, with the Gretchen Carlson stuff and mm-hmm. a lot of that, I think that the conversation publicly has become much more in favor of the victims.
Yeah.
Pointing to the advertisers pulling the plug, right? But also the fact that a lot of these women who've come forward still have careers. That it's sort of not, it's more looked at like, it's more looking, it feels like it's exposing these men rather than looking at these women like,
Hold on. There's a difference though. Because Andrea Macris was not an on-air personality.
Right.
She's a producer.
And a lot of
Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and Andrea Tanteros
are known by the public, right? Yes. Yeah, and trusted, I guess, by some people. But some of these people that have come out against Bill O'Reilly are not known.
No. One was an intern, I think, low-level staffer.
Right.
Yeah.
But I do think that the difference between like 2003 and 2017, I think there has been a shift in terms of how we look at, and I think Bill Cosby was part of that.
Sure. But there hasn't been a shift at Fox, clearly. Even in the wake of the Ailes departure, that wasn't enough to shake anybody. Because some of these accusations are after Ailes got fired.
Yeah.
So, and remember, a lot of these women who have been on the air the last few days are saying like, oh, there's still people working there who engage in this behavior.
Of course. When you create a culture that this is permissible, it's really hard to undo.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard to understand.
And we don't know if they're talking about on-air personalities or behind-the-scenes people or high-level, you know, who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
I don't know.
So
it's probably everybody.
It could be.
Yeah.
It's just, God, I hope it comes out about Hannity.
Yeah.
I almost feel like he's too smart to get caught up in that, but he's a jackass. So.
And, you know, I want to tell you, like, I'm going to tell you, audience, because Trav knows, but... when I was 18, I was sexually harassed at work.
Yeah.
And I worked for this engineering firm and I was hired as like a executive assistant to like the main executive assistant. It was this old guy and he's my parents' age. And I was 18 and cute as a button. And
still are.
Oh, thanks, baby. some really, really gross shit happened to me. And it started light and it got worse. Like he would talk about his sexual exploits. He would talk about pillow talk.
That's how it starts, right? Yeah. It seems semi-innocuous and you're not sure what to make of it.
Exactly. And you're like, this is uncomfortable.
And if you don't run screaming or slap them, then they think it's a green light to keep going.
Then he was like, oh, like I turned the air conditioning on, but I can see your nipples through your bra.
Wow.
Yeah. Then it was, hey, can you come look at my computer? I need your help with something. And there's porn pulled up. Then it was, hey, I need you to come in on Saturday. It'll just be you and me. And he's rubbing my shoulders. And I had told literally no one. I didn't tell Dana. I didn't tell my friends. I didn't tell anyone.
Certainly didn't tell your parents because this was like a friend of your dad's.
He married a friend of my parents late in life. And my dad fucking hated him already. So I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my parents.
Because it's humiliating, right? And it's terrifying.
It's humiliating. It's terrifying. I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Sure.
That like, what am I doing to provoke this behavior? Finally, when he said, I need you to come in tomorrow, and he was rubbing my shoulders and there was porn and he was like, it'll just be you and me. He was like whispering in my ear. I went home that day and I told Dana and I was super terrified because I felt like he would be mad at me maybe
or he would do something.
Dana literally said to me, holy fuck, why didn't you tell me before now? You're never going back there.
Of course.
Ever again, quit. You're not even going to go quit. So the next day I wrote a letter that just said, I'm sorry, but I'm no longer going to work for this company. And Dana drove it to the place, dropped it off, and I never saw them ever again. I never reported it. I didn't tell the higher-ups. I didn't tell HR. I just quit my job.
What year was this?
I was 18. So this would have been 2001.
So really, there wasn't a lot of stuff on the books yet?
Or well, it was just sexual harassment. No. Sexual harassment was definitely an established thing at this point. But I did not feel comfortable or empowered, or I felt like I would be blamed. I felt like no one would believe. I understand. Like, at this point in my life, you fucking come at me with even a slight comment, I will legit
burn the world out.
But like, when I was 18, I was young and I didn't know better. So I can understand why women don't come forward.
Of course.
I have felt those feelings. I've gone through this.
And the reason this guy did this to you is he felt empowered over you.
Yeah.
He felt as though you wouldn't resist. You couldn't. Yeah.
He knew that I would. Yeah, I was a target. I was young and I was impressionable and I wanted the job and it paid pretty good and I didn't know better. It's interesting that he had a connection to my parents, because you'd think that that would, you know,
wake them
deter
up.
Him. Interestingly,
well, eventually you told them about what happened.
I did. Yes, I did. I told my dad, and
I'm amazed your dad didn't just grab the shotgun and ride down there.
Well, yeah, he wanted to. But what happened was, this guy actually ended up embezzling like $1.1 million from the company and disappeared.
It's amazing how certain things go hand in hand.
Yeah. But my point of telling the story is, first of all, I just want everyone to know, like, if this is happening to you, absolutely, I understand that it's hard to say something. But what I learned from it is, when you come forward and say something to the people that you love, you
become empowered.
Yes. And I deeply and sincerely hope that the people in your life do not shame you or blame you. But even if they do, you have to understand it is not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. You did not cause this. And it is unacceptable. And it's never okay.
No.
It's not acceptable.
Never.
This is a work environment. In any environment, but if you are at work and something like this is happening to you, say something.
Or if it's with a colleague or a boss and it is off work premises or off work times, it is still inappropriate.
Yes, it is. And it's not your fault. And if you can't tell anybody else, you can tell me and I will help you.
Sure.
But I do think, like, saying, like, why don't women just say something? I get it. I get why they don't. I get why women don't come forward. I have experienced it. So
keep that in perspective, right? We're just talking about all the women who have come forward. Imagine all the ones who haven't. All the women who
didn't. Because I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm me.
Any closing? Yeah. Rachel has never been lacked for being outspoken.
Well, when I was 18. But anyway, yeah.
So closing thoughts then. We got just a couple minutes here to...
Well, I hope we don't go to war with North Korea. I hope Marine Le Pen does not win the
We didn't
election.
Even talk about that. That's going to be one to watch.
At this point, I'm like, probably, between Brexit and Donald Trump, I'm sure.
And there was a terrorist attack on police just the other night. Mm-hmm. Very suspicious timing.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, either like it was something was fishy about it, or
it was
these terrorist groups obviously want...
Yes.
Marie Le Pen, because people like her are a great recruiting tool.
Yeah, just like Donald Trump is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she's a garbage person. She's been around in French politics for a long time, and everyone always looked at her sort of like David Duke. But now with Brexit,
now
Trump,
she's
got a real chance to win.
Yeah.
And the world is a scary place now.
Okay. Well, we covered a lot of ground. Obviously, we'll be back next week. We will have some guests on.
Yep.
Any ideas, comments, whatever you want, at Irreverent Duo. irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. You can find Rachel's personal Twitter if you want to share that.
Yeah, absolutely. @madmetamim, which is, let me look, because I think I spelled it funny.
You don't remember how you spelled it?
Well, I think I spelled it, because you couldn't do the whole thing. So it is @...
Yeah, I use the other one mostly.
MadMadamMim. So @madmadammim, but there's two M's in madam. Feel free to reach out to me there, or at Irreverent Duo, or anywhere.
Okay. We're going to go check out the March for Science down the street, the Civic Center here in Denver. And thank you guys. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.